to the Process Podcast, an interview series exploring the process of survival as a creative. Typically, we talk to folks from all sorts of backgrounds and industries about money, mental health, relationships, the creative process itself, and more. For this season, we're trying something a little bit new and experimenting with theme seasons. And for this one, we're focusing on music, bands, artists, and industry folks. Big thanks to Desert Days Music Fest for helping make a lot of these interviews happen. Visit desertdays.org to check them out and to grab your tickets for the fest in the fall of this year. Also, thank you to Ton Starts Bandit for providing their song Wet Ass Morning as our intro and outro music, and to Hannah Spencer for doing all of our branding and design work. Hope you dig it. Hey, hello. This week's episode is with Tyler Endear. He does A&R for two super rad indie record labels, Father Daughter Records, which is pretty huge in the indie music scene, as well as Celestial Sounds in Gainesville, and is one of the co-founders of a music online music publication called Portals, which really gives the artists a voice and kind of lets them tell the story that they want to tell. It is also super cool. You should check it out. We get super nerdy about curation and A&R stuff in this episode. Tyler shares some advice for artists who are looking to get signed in today's day and age, and his approach to music discovery in today's day and age. We also talk a lot about the Austin music scene, his journey to getting to where he is today, and how he makes it all work financially, and how he has in the past, and some of the realities around that, and working and running smaller organizations in the music industry today. Yeah, look at this short intro. Look at me go. Aren't you proud? Anyway, if you like it, as always, please rate, review. This episode has a lot of stuff we mentioned. It's going to have a lot of links, I think. You can find all of those at theprocess.co. And I hope you dig it. Big thanks to Tyler for his time. Sweet. Thanks. Cheers, y'all. See you next week. How long have you been living in Austin?
I've been here about 4 years.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I've spent a little bit of time there. What's your take on the Austin music scene these days?
Yeah, I really love it. It's a really great community here. There's lots of different things happening that people maybe wouldn't expect genre-wise to be happening in Austin. Like, there's a really thriving electronic and like techno and house scene that's kind of popped up in the last 4 or 5 years. It's a really great rap community here. There's, of course, like a really storied and great DIY indie rock scene here. So there's a lot of different stuff happening genre-wise, and everybody's very like supportive of each other. And, you know, like any city, like we struggle with DIY spaces like closing down and popping back up. It's very transient in that way. But we do have one DIY venue in particular called the Museum of Human Achievement that's been pretty longstanding. It's been here as long as I've been here. And they do like not just music stuff, but theater and visual art. And so, yeah, there's like a really solid community, and the pace of the city for me personally, I think is like just right. It's like slow pace, but there's still a lot of ambition and a lot of drive, but a little bit, you know, slower than New York or LA or Chicago. And so, yeah, I really like it.
Yeah. I've been to the Museum of Human Achievement before. They were like getting ready for the big gallery walk thing. Or open studios. It was really cool to like watch them in their process. It was like kind of chaotic, but in a really beautiful way.
Yeah, they're a really amazing space.
That's one of my favorite things about Austin too, is it does feel like people are genuinely supportive of one another, not just like fake supportive.
No, definitely.
Cool. So I would love for listeners who might not be familiar, I'd love for you to walk us through what it is you do with both Father-Daughter Records and with Portals, and just, yeah, your kind of general gist.
Yeah, so I do what is called A&R, which stands for Artists and Repertoire, at Father-Daughter Records. And I also do some of that work for another label that's based in Gainesville, Florida, called Celestial Sound. What A&R is, in general, kind of like talent scouting, essentially. But on top of that, it's also sort of overseeing the creative process of putting together an album campaign. So the A&R is the point person for putting together press photos and the bio and music video stuff, merchandise, Any other sort of elements like that that kind of come into the campaign? I'm the point person for that and sort of in charge of being like I sort of act as like a creative soundboard for those things as well. So, it's like a conversation about all those things, and I kind of give my creative input not only on those things but also sometimes the music itself. Yeah, so that's what I do for Father Daughter and Celestial Sound. And then Portals is a music publication that I've been running with some other really amazing folks since 2012, and it's kind of gone through many different phases. It started off as like a sort of music blog collective. Before I was doing Portals, I had my own blog and kind of got involved in this community of other bloggers, and we decided to start this kind of bigger site, which became Portals. Through the years, we've just had a, kind of rotating cast of contributors and different levels of activity. And I'd say now we're kind of in a more sort of slowed down, slow journalism sort of vibe where we just do a couple of features every few months. And then we have a bi-monthly mixtape that we put out. And yeah, it's just kind of like a labor of love project. And it's an outlet for me to do work with artists who I don't work with at the labels that I work for. Yeah, it's like a really great community. We have thrown shows and different types of events, and yeah, it's really great. So those are all the three things that I do currently in music.
Cool. I was looking at some of the articles on portals. You really like give a voice to the artist too, oftentimes, right? Like they can kind of, it seems like you let them kind of write whatever they want to write to go with the media that's in
Yeah,
the
definitely.
articles.
Yeah, it's
Is that
very
true?
much like artist friendly in that we, yeah, try to include their voices as much as possible and kind of give them the space to write about their music or their experiences. That's definitely like a big marker of the site for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure they appreciate that. One of the artists I spoke to recently was like, we're just talking about interviewing in general, and I was asking them like what they wish that they were asked more often. And one of them was saying that he found that you can oftentimes like manipulate the conversation once you've done it enough. So it's nice that you just like open it up to them and be like, what do
Yeah,
you want to talk
totally.
about? Since they're like so used to answering the same
Yeah, we
questions
really
over
try
and
to stay
over.
away from like that traditional interview structure, and like nothing against folks who do still use that format, but yeah, it feels a lot more collaborative and just experimental in general when you kind of let the artists have a little bit more freedom in terms of what they get to say or want to talk about, and it isn't necessarily up to us to guide or direct that.
Yeah. Speaking of questions that people are asked all the time, I know
Yeah,
you get
go
this
ahead.
a lot, but I also feel like I have to ask it. A&R today, like the talent scout part of that, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, so for me, it's like it's a combination of digging for music online pretty intensely. It's a, I spend a couple hours each day just listening to music on various platforms from Bandcamp to SoundCloud to Spotify and YouTube. Also, like through my work with Portals and my, work with Father Daughter and Celestial Sound as well. My email is like widely available, so I get sent a lot of music as well from artists themselves and publicists and managers. And so a lot of it is like sifting through all that and trying to find the stuff that is most compelling to me. And then a good amount of it is also going to shows still and discovering things in a live setting, both at like more official types of venues, sometimes DIY venues, sometimes in houses, at festivals. And then it's also kind of just keeping your ear to the ground with like people as well. Like a lot of it is word of mouth, talking with other people who work in music about music and sort of getting tips on what they're listening to or what they're checking out. Yeah, it's definitely like a lot, doing A&R in the internet digital era. Yeah, it looks a lot different than, perhaps doing it sort of pre-internet when you just didn't have as many resources to check out music so casually. But I'd say it's almost harder because there's just so many different options in terms of how you can discover something. And so you kind of have to do a good job of being more curatorial. And I don't really believe you can listen in a passive way, even though it's so easily available to stream and check out things, I still think you have to kind of have some intention with the work that you're doing with scouting and discovery, and it has to have some sort of personal or human touch to it. Like, I don't ever rely on, like, me personally for A&R, I don't like check my Spotify Discover Weekly, and like, I don't really trust the algorithm. So I'm looking in digital spaces, but I'm not just letting the algorithm shoot things at me. I'm still making sure that I'm seeking things out on my own.
I'm actually, like, one of the things I was super stoked to talk to you about is the role of a curator today, which we'll dive into more later. But what is that? I feel like this is an obvious question, but like, what is that reason why you, why is it so important to keep a personal touch and not just rely on that algorithm?
Because I think as an A&R person or as a scout, you also have to be bringing sort of a point of view to it. Like, you're trying to find interesting artists who have interesting stories. I think you have to match that with some sort of story of your own. So if you're having things that are just being thrown at you through the algorithm, there is no journey to get to that song besides I heard it on a playlist on my, you know, Spotify account. I think it's important to have a journey to that artist in terms of, I think it's important to have a point of view or a reason why you're compelled to something. I think it's important to bring a certain amount of context to the discovery process. So, yeah, if you're just kind of relying on the algorithm, then I think you're missing out on a lot of other contextual details that are important in the process of discovery.
Right. How long have you been doing
A&R? I've only been doing it officially for a little over a year. But my role at Portals has, even though it's like a sort of a journalistic outlet, I have sort of been the one of the main people at Portals who is kind of seeking stuff out and bringing new things to the table. So, like, in a non-traditional sense, I feel like I've been doing it since 2010 when I started blogging. But for work, for money, I've only been doing it for a little over a year.
Cool. Yeah. So you are like child/adult of the internet. It's the way you've always done it.
No, for sure.
So I asked that. When I had a curation service, I started to get, towards the end especially, like, pretty flooded with press emails, like generic boilerplate press release type of things. I apparently got added to some list somewhere. Do you, A, pay attention to any of those? And B, like, this is a really nerdy, dumb question, but, like, do you have a email process when it comes to A&R stuff?
Yeah. So I do pay attention to what publicists and PR folks are sending me. And I have, like, more personal relationships with certain publicists that I've kind of worked with over the years and whose taste I trust. And they are also very knowledgeable about what I'm into and what we do at Portals and what we do at Father Daughter if they're trying to pitch something for that. I think over the years I've been able to kind of single out certain publicists who I think are really doing interesting work and really do care about the artists that they work with and also are bringing a specific point of view. And then there are other publicists or PR firms who, are sending out kind of just more generic press releases and aren't really being curatorial about who they are approaching. Because I'll have some people who will hit me up about doing a piece on Portals, and it's very clear that they haven't engaged with the site at all based on what they're sending me. It's like, this is clearly something that we would never cover, and this is a feature that we don't do. And so it's pretty clear that you've engaged with the site either not at all or very little, and you're kind of just taking a shot in the dark at, you know, a random list of blogs that you have. And so, yeah, in terms of, like, my process with that, like, honestly, like, I tell people all the time, like, there's actually, like, at least for me, like, there's not really a rationale. Like, I might open an email from a publicist at, like, 1 a.m. because, like, I'm up and I'm just, like, in a mood and I'm digging through my email and checking out stuff. I might check out something early in the morning and it doesn't hit me, but then it'll hit me later on that night when I revisit it. So, yeah, there's no, like, I don't have, like, a specific process for going through my email. I mean, I check it every morning and I try to listen to the stuff that is most interesting to me, kind of like when, you know, when I first get up, but sometimes I have to revisit things or hear things in a different context or take an album outside with me on a walk or a bike ride or something, as opposed to just listening to it at my desk on my headphones or on my speakers. I like try to like make a list of things that I want to listen to that look most interesting to me throughout the week. And then I try to listen to them in many different contexts. Like I try to take it outside or play it for friends at like a party or a get together and sort of see how the music feels in different spaces, as opposed to like just listening to things like, yeah, in my one sort of stationary setting. The only like real process that I have is making a list of things and then, yeah, taking it into different places. But in terms of why something might hit me at a certain time, like it, you know, it just depends on what I'm feeling. And there's a million different reasons for why something might compel me. And there's no one kind of answer I think I can give on that.
Yeah. I feel like that context switching for listening is so important. I try to do that too. I know you just said there's no like magic bullet as to what hits you, but is there anything like aesthetically or audibly that you're looking for specifically when considering music for either or for both labels, like a certain style you're looking for?
Honestly, no. Like, I think I really try my best to have really, really, really broad taste. I really believe that you shouldn't write off any music genre, specifically if like you're someone who works in music or you're doing the job of A&R. If you're your own person and you're just like casually checking out music, it's a different thing. But I think if you're getting paid to write about music, to do A&R, to be a manager, a publicist, whatever, I really believe that you shouldn't write off any genre and you should be as curious as possible about everything, because it just makes for a more well-rounded listener. And so, yeah, I don't have like a particular style that I'm looking for. I mean, I think what I am looking for are for artists who are maybe just starting out or kind of in their most infantile state or just starting to emerge. You know, Father Daughter is definitely like an incubator type of label. We mostly work with artists who are just getting their start. And there are a few artists that we work with who are a little bit more established, who have maybe been at bigger labels and then have come to us. But for the most part, we're working with artists who are pretty fresh and pretty new. And so that is something that like I do keep in mind, because it's the most interesting work for me. Not to say that I'm not open to working with an artist who's already had label experience or music industry experience, but I really do love finding something that hasn't been tampered with at all and sort of helping them tell their story and sort of build up their presence in the music world from scratch is the most fun for me, as opposed to coming in when things are maybe already more established. So something that I keep in mind. But in terms of genre or style or aesthetic, I'm interested in anything. And at Father Daughter specifically, we are definitely open to anything and want to keep broadening our roster in terms of genre as well.
Cool. Yeah, because I feel like Father Daughter does have a certain aesthetic, but maybe it's just like the feel in general. Totally. I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's no doubt that like historically Father Daughter has been an incubator for a lot of indie rock or bedroom pop sort of projects. But I think in the last like 4 or 5 years, if you look at the roster, I mean, we've got everything from like Shamir to an artist that we're working with right now called Sir Baby Girl. That's like a very like ambitious queer pop project. We've got this artist named Tasha, who's more of like a sort of low key R&B folk singer songwriter. We've got Namdi Ogbenaya, who's both like a amazing punk artist, drummer / rapper. So I think, yeah, historically, like you could look at Father Daughter and kind of pin it as like an indie rock label. But I think in the last 4 or 5 years, things have really broadened a lot. And certainly since I've come on board, I don't really think that we have one genre that kind of ties everything together. But yeah, there is an aesthetic in that like we're working with emerging artist and we are coming from a DIY background and ethos. And so I think that, and I think the label is a very like familial style label. Like we're doing business, but we're also trying to create a family and create a community. And so I think that's kind of aesthetically what we maybe sort of project to the rest of the world.
I feel like the common theme among your artists too is that like they all, for anyone who like kind of has an ear for music, they all have pop and like the sense of the word, like popular potential for sure. So is the idea like as an incubator, we're going to bring you in. We know you're going to sign to a bigger label one day. We're totally okay with like being this like foundational step. Is that the idea?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of different scenarios that can play out with that sort of thing. And in a lot of cases, like an artist will put out their first LP or EP with Father Daughter Records, and it will, you know, garner a lot of attention, and then they will get offered bigger label deals, and we'll move on, and we'll continue to have like a great relationship with them, but we're totally happy to like, yeah, be that step. And then in other cases, artists will come and put out their first record with us and find success, and we'll be like, hey, we really like what we've got going, and we're not really interested in going elsewhere, and so we're going to stick with you. And we've had a lot of bands that have grown with us as well. And then in the case of someone like Shamir was on like a major indie label, XL Recordings, and kind of had this like very like big drop on the music world, like lots of press, like was sort of being groomed to be this like almost like radio pop star, and then wanted to make a change both musically and in terms of like who he was working with. And he decided to work with us, Father Daughter, and was a situation where we took on someone who was already very established and had already kind of had a taste of the major label world. So there's a lot of different situations that can come about. But yeah, we certainly don't mind being that first step for bands. And we definitely encourage bands to seek out bigger opportunities if they come along. And if they want to stick with us, that's great too.
Does it feel kind of like the wild, wild west of music right now in terms of like, no one really exactly knows where things are going? Or is it a little bit more controlled than like, do you have a more foresight?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely feels like the Wild Wild West in a lot of ways, just with the increase of streaming culture. Like, I mean, even when I started blogging, which is now 9 years ago, which it's kind of crazy to say, but still like not that long ago, things were just completely different. Like I started blogging in a pre-streaming era. Spotify like wasn't a thing. Like Bandcamp and SoundCloud had like just started. And like iTunes was still the only like digital, you know, main kind of digital store for music. So yeah, a lot has changed since then, and the future is unpredictable. But I like thinking about that question, like I almost feel like if you look back in history, like the music industry and just creative industries in general are kind of always a wild, wild west sort of situation, you know, like maybe I'm speaking ignorantly, and you know, obviously I wasn't working in the music industry pre-internet era, but I still imagine there were like a bunch of things about the future of music that were unpredictable. And if you just look at the way that music formats have changed over the year, I think with each format, you know, tape, CD, vinyl, like each one of those has brought about a certain amount of unpredictability within the industry, and labels have to then quickly adapt and change. And so I don't know that we're any different than previous industries in that we are just kind of dealing with the same things of formats change and you adapt and you try to make predictions for the future based on your own experience. But yeah, I don't think that the music industry or other artistic industries ever really find like a dull moment. I think things are always kind of unpredictable, and that's both like really scary, but also like really exciting. And I think it's why a lot of people get involved in this work, you know?
Yeah. It sounds like you mostly take a positive perspective, positive outlook on it.
And yeah. I mean, I just
look for the opportunities.
Like I definitely try to have a balance of like optimism and skepticism about the music industry. And like, I'm very critical about the music industry actually, and like have been very vocal about that on social media and in other like interviews I've done and stuff. But I do think that we're maybe due for, yeah, some more optimistic perspective, because what else are we going to do if we're just always drowning in this like awful conversation about how streaming is ruining everything? I think we need to figure out ways to combat that, and we need to figure out ways to keep sort of engage music listening and discovery alive. And so, yeah, I'm trying to like bring a little bit of positivity to that that conversation in this in 2019. I wouldn't say it's like mostly positive, but I'm trying to be more positive this year about the future of the music industry and what I can contribute to that. So
it's tough. I get that. I loved your, I think it's like your pinned tweet that you don't call out anyone specifically, but I will, for like a Pitchfork or the bigger publications to like acknowledge the smaller labels, acknowledge the smaller publications that wrote about those artists before they got big enough to like have a
rating on
Pitchfork or whatever.
Like, tweet is very much about,
I
just
thought that
like,
was a really
give the
great
full
point
context
and
like
that
tell
I would
the whole
also
story,
because
like those details are important. And it's like, if you care about this stuff, like it's history. And so like, it's really frustrating when someone, for example, like will reference someone like Soccer Mommy or Snail Mail or Mitski or Vagabond or any of the like great indie rock contemporaries right now. And they'll sort of be like, yeah, you know, they were like releasing music in their Bandcamp era. And then they like jumped and all of a sudden they're on Matador secretly or whatever. It totally erases all the smaller labels, the smaller venues, DIY spaces, writers or whatever, who were helping fostering those bands and nurturing those bands before they jumped to a bigger label. And I just think it's irresponsible to talk about these artists in a way where it's like, oh, so-and-so just came out of nowhere. Like, no artist comes out of nowhere. Every artist has some sort of story or context that is important to sort of lay out. And so, yeah, I hope moving forward that more people give credit to, the people who were a part of the story before things got really big, because it's important from a historical point of view, if you care about that kind of thing, and if you care about telling the story accurately, you know, so.
Although we are trying to be more positive in 2019, I would love to hear some of your like top takeaways about the music industry.
My top what from the industry? Sorry, you cut out
maybe
a little bit.
Targeted to people who are like interested in working with indie, smaller indie labels, or who maybe want to start one themselves. Like what you would tell them in regards
someone's trying
to the music industry.
To start out in the music industry now, what advice would I give to them? Sorry, you cut out a little bit again.
Yeah, I wonder what's going on. Yes, exactly. And especially in terms of like, so the thing that's in my head is playlist on Spotify and like how that's driving so much right now. And a lot of people say like, it's all about the connections you have within them. I have no idea how much of that stuff is true, but that's one aspect I was thinking of, but also just,
I mean, like, I think like before you start worrying about like, how to get placement on like playlists on Spotify or Apple or other streaming services and sort of how to like break into the more traditional industry spaces. I think it's really important to just start doing whatever thing you want to start doing and building a community around that organically with people online, in person. Try to do it without thinking about it becoming a successful thing. Yeah, I don't really have any friends or whatever in the music industry who like very consciously decided like, oh, I'm going to start a blog or I'm going to start a record label or I'm going to start writing about music or whatever. Or same for artists as well. Like the artists that I know who have been the most successful didn't have some sort of like, oh, I want to figure out how to break into the music industry and become a successful indie artist. They all just started doing it. And doing it because it was something that was fun, because it felt like they needed to do it, and without worry about an audience. And I think when you kind of have that naivete, yeah, you get to like experience a bunch of different things. Like you get to like figure out what it's like to fail a bunch of times, and you kind of do it in public, and you get to then try next time and fix what you failed on last time, and sort of restructure and just keep working and building, and then eventually you will find a small audience or a bigger audience if you just keep at it. Like, I don't know, it's a hard question to answer, just because I think trying to go into it with any sort of like conscious, like, I at least for me in my experience, it was all very much like I started doing it very wide-eyed and in a very like naive sense. I wasn't thinking about an audience. Like, I remember even when I started blogging, like I would post my like posts like at all different hours. I would put up a post at 2 a.m., sometimes in the morning, sometimes in the afternoon. And I had like no idea about like trying to schedule something so it like hits the conversation in the right way, like in between like noon and five or whatever. Like I had no concept for how to do music journalism or how the music industry worked. I just sort of started playing around. And I actually think that's the key thing is like, start playing around, start trying things, like start experimenting with things without the worry of like, is anybody going to listen to this or is anybody going to read this? And you'll be surprised how organically people will gravitate to the thing that you're doing if you stay consistent and if you bring a certain amount of love and heart to it. So yeah, I think that would be like my overall advice is like, just start playing around and like have some fun and like, don't worry about the success of the project, because I think it's the people who are hung up on having a successful band or blog or record label or whatever, don't actually make it because they're too caught up in trying to figure out whatever the you know, the secret is. And there really is no secret because this industry is just constantly changing and evolving. And so you kind of just need to start doing your own thing and see what people you find like you who are also into what you're doing and kind of build from there. So.
Right. When you feel that no one's listening, you can like right. create weirdo art for your fellow weirdos.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter. Right? Like you're going to attract the people who are attracted to that. Cool. So switching gears a bit, how did you get into this world? I know you're blogging, but Pat, like how did your blog get, you're like doing what you wanted to do with it. How did it gain some attention and how did you get to where you are today?
Yeah, well, I fell into like the music world pretty randomly. I've always been like a music fan my whole life and was always interested in experimental and independent music and things that were being released outside of the mainstream. But I never thought about it being a career, or I never even really did anything with it as a hobby. Like I didn't, you know, do zines or anything in high school, or like, I didn't know about music journalism as a thing. I was just kind of digging for music online and going to shows and have always been enthusiastic about music. But yeah, I grew up doing theater and choir, and I moved to Chicago to study theater. But I sort of had a falling out with the theater community and just sort of wanted to get out and try something new. Yeah, around that time, this is like 2008, 2009, I was discovering different music blogs and sort of discovering music journalism in general. Got really inspired by this sort of community that I had come across and decided to start a blog. But it's like when I started doing it, I didn't think like, oh, I'm going to start a music blog. Like I kind of just like very randomly made a Tumblr page and was like, I guess I'll like start posting things that I'm finding here. Like I didn't really think too much of it. I didn't put any thought into it really. I just started it and started doing it. And then yeah, slowly it started to gain an audience and I started to figure out kind of what my sort of style was and you know, got better at it as I kept doing it. And then, yeah, over the years, I connected into a community with other like-minded bloggers, and we got this idea to start this sort of bigger publication, which became Portals. Portals kind of became my whole entire world from like 2012 until 2016. It's still obviously a big part of my world, but we were very active in that time and we're doing a lot of different things and we're hosting all sorts of events and I was meeting all sorts of people. So through that, I met Jesse Frick, who's the owner of Father Daughter Records. And Portals had also been covering a lot of the artists that were on Father Daughter. So we had been like friends long before I started working for them. And then, yeah, in 2016, things started to slow down with Portals. A lot of the staff members were moving on to bigger publications, and some people wanted to stop writing about music altogether. We kind of made the decision to just restructure the site so it could still exist, but it didn't need to be as active as it was in previous years and could kind of just be a little bit more of a slow burning project. So once that slowed down, I decided that I wanted to try to do something else in music outside of just music writing and journalism, and had always been interested in working for a label, but had never really pursued it in any way. So I started reaching out to different people that I knew at labels that I'd had some connections with or previous experiences with, and did a couple of different interviews. And Jesse was just like the best person that I had talked to and that I connected with the most. And we had already had a history. So they invited me or offered me a job. And around that time, too, I had also been talking with the other label that I do work for, Alestial Sound. And similar situation, I had met the folks from Alestial Sound through the Portals community and through shows and different things. And we had just kept in touch for a long time. And they were looking for someone to come on as an A&R. And so I got both of those jobs like right around the same time. And I've been doing it ever since and continuing to do Portals. And so, yeah, it was, you know, a lot of like small, insignificant decisions that have led me to where I'm at now. And I'm really grateful. So
are either of those A&R jobs like full time salaried positions?
Yeah.
Are they both part time?
So,
how does that work? Okay.
Yeah.
Are you technically like a contract freelancer?
Yeah, exactly.
And the eyes of the tax man? What were you doing to pay the bills in the 2012 to 2016,
yeah,
I think
you
said?
For a while,
focus
like,
on Portals.
I was actually doing Portals full-time. So I had moved to Austin to pursue doing Portals full-time with some folks who were also living here. And we were mostly bringing in income from doing different events that we then found sponsorship for. And we had like a solid amount of sponsors that we had really great relationships with, and we were doing 5 or 6 events a year. And so with that and like doing other odd jobs, I was doing like caretaker work. I was doing a few other like freelance music writing gigs. I did just all sorts of like really odd jobs, honestly, but yeah, mostly like caretaker work and doing Portals. But doing Portals full time just like wasn't sustainable for the kind of stuff that we were doing, because we're so niche and because we're like covering stuff in its very like infantile state, like very new, very fresh. And like with the change of streaming and everything, Portals just couldn't exist in the way that we wanted to with where the media climate was sort of headed to. So yeah, we decided to pull things back and make it solely a labor of love. And that's when I decided, like, I still want to work in music, but I want to find something else that's, like, not a music writing gig. And so that's what I was doing.
Totally. It's tough out there
it's really
tough. Media.
Yeah, and you,
anything
I mean,
right now.
I was doing all sorts of random stuff. It's like, that's why when you asked the question, I was like, God, it's like a long list of ridiculous jobs that I was doing. Because, a lot of time you have to just, like, have various side hustles. And, like, I've been doing this for almost a decade, and I'm just now getting to a place where I'm able to do it full time with these two different gigs. So it took a while, and I'm still working to get to a place where I'm like totally financially comfortable. It's still really tough because I'm working for companies who are, you know, we're smaller. We have a very small staff. We're not necessarily in the big leagues. It's tough owning a small business, working for a small business. It's tough. So yeah.
So that's one of the main point of this whole show is to like just like an honest look at that at how tough it is and why we do it.
Totally.
So I'm in the same boat in many aspects, and I think a lot of our listeners are too. Like you don't have to share like your financial goals, but what is the end goal? Like how important is all that, or is it more important that you're doing what you love and what you're passionate about, and obviously like comfortable enough? Everyone wants comfortable enough. Like, is that your goal, or is that your, are you hoping for more? Like, what's your take on that?
I'm trying to just be sustainable and be comfortable. And I really am happy working for two labels that really have a DIY and sort of family ethos. And maybe aren't making as much money or don't have as many resources as the bigger labels, but get to take more risk and be more creative with the projects that we take on because of that. Yeah. And I don't know, in the time that I was like interviewing with other labels, I was talking to labels of varying different sizes of varying sizes. And the bigger labels that I talked to, the working environments were just, I don't know, just felt way too corporate, not a lot of family love or friendship, like very competitive and not taking as many risks because they are this very established label that kind of has a history of knowing what makes them successful and knowing what brings in money. And so a lot of those labels tend to sort of stick to that and don't take as many risks. Whereas working at Father Daughter and working at Celestial Sound, we do have less resources, but we're down to try anything. And we really, I don't know, really, really care about what we're doing. And we're a very artist-friendly label. Yeah, I'd rather be doing something like that where I feel like I'm actually saying something and I'm actually like helping change the music world in some sort of small indirect way versus like working at a label that has a lot of money, but maybe really isn't taking as many risks or trying to say as much in sort of like a political context. And yeah, not to like politicize everything, but I do think it's important to like have things at stake, right? And like at Father Daughter and at Celestial Sound, like we're trying to tell stories, we're trying to change the way that the industry is, we're trying to make things more diverse, more inclusive. And those are things that I really value and that are really important to me. And I don't want to be somewhere where there's nothing at stake and things are just comfortable and easy and financially cushiony. You know, it's better to me to be working at something that does have a little bit more of a fight in it, you know? So.
Totally. I love that. And I do. I'll have to look more into Celestial Sounds, but I know from an outsider's perspective, it feels like the father-daughter family has
totally, yeah,
values that they stick to, that you stick to. And that's thank like you. Yeah. Super respectable, admirable. Would you, if someone wanted to get into the indie music scene right now, industry right now, would you tell them that, like, do you think there is like a stable full-time job that exists within the industry? Or do you think it's like, no matter what,
there are positions out there that are salary, that are full-time and have pretty solid pay. But to get to those positions, like, yeah, you have to put in a lot of work. And so there are those positions, but they're not a lot of them, you know? So most of the time you'll have to be doing other side hustles or, in my case, and same with Jesse, who's the owner of Father Daughter, do several different music jobs. Jesse runs the label. They're also a band manager. They run their own management firm called Citrine Management. And they were a publicist for like almost 15 years and just got to a point where they could knock off the publicist gig and they just do management in the label now. And in my case, I'm working for two different labels. I still do, like, you know, every once in a while, different music consulting projects or other things that I can lend my expertise to. So yeah, you're either like doing several different jobs within your industry, or you're lucky enough to get a position that is full-time and salaried and a little bit more comfortable. But then in those cases, you might have to sacrifice creativity or just like different risks that you can take and whatnot, because you are in maybe a more corporate environment. Yeah, I wouldn't say that you should completely lose hope on finding something that is sustainable, but it is damn tough to break into this industry, and you kind of just have to keep going and keep showing up and be patient and like try to have fun too. Like I said, like I didn't have like dreams of like working in the music industry. So I can't necessarily speak from the perspective of someone who has been dreaming about this for a while and is very consciously trying to break into the industry. I broke into the industry in a very unconscious way, like was just kind of randomly stumbled into one community, which led me to another community, which led me to another one, and has led me to where I'm at now. But in no way was it super conscious. So it's going to be different for everybody. And for folks who are like more determined to like actually like break in, like, yeah, your story is going to be completely different from mine, because I'm coming from a perspective where I didn't really know what I was doing. And I kind of found out midway through doing it, like, oh, maybe this is something I could do as a job. So yeah, it's completely different for everybody.
Right. I think in general, these days, it's important to keep an open mind like you did too. And maybe just like keep an eye out for those things that are sparking, whether music or not. So regarding the creative direction part of your job, is there anything artists should have in mind these days in terms of standing out aesthetically, artistically? Like, how much does all that matter? What role does all of that play? And how hands-on are you with artists when it comes to the visuals? Right. And all that just goes into a launch in general.
Each artist should be doing whatever they are compelled to do visually or aesthetically. That's like what I'm most attracted to, is someone who is like honestly doing what is true to them in terms of their aesthetic or what they want to project visually and has their own story. Once I build a relationship with that artist and we start working together, it's a case by case thing. Some artists come in like fully realized, right? And like have the vision set out, know exactly what they want for the visuals, what they want for their music video, how they want the bio to read, and kind of have it all figured out and are ready. And in those situations, I can be a little bit more hands-off and really only give feedback when it's asked. In other situations, I'm working with an artist who maybe has really, really great songs, but hasn't really thought about the visual aspect of their project and really haven't thought about an album campaign in like a larger picture way. And so that is when it's my job to be a little bit more involved on giving creative feedback. But father daughter in general, like, we're approaching you and we want to work with you. It's because you've compelled us and you are doing something that is exciting to us. And so we're not trying to change that at all. We're only here to offer feedback or creative input if it's asked of us. So it's never a kind of situation where, you know, we're like in the studio with an artist or we're telling an artist like, oh, you can't do this for the single. Like, it, at the end of the day, it comes down to what the artist wants to do, and we're happy to give our feedback and give our input, like I said, if it's asked. But in general, there's a certain amount of trust between both parties, and so we really give the artists creative freedom and want them to do whatever they want to do, because that's the reason why we sign them.
Right. Is that pretty standard, or is that unique among...
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly that, like,
some of the smaller labels,
like major label level, like, that is not the case. And A&R at that level looks a lot different than what I'm doing. And those A&Rs are looking at all sorts of data and are very much involved in the process, the songwriting process, and picking singles and picking videos. In the independent music scene, like, it kind of is different from label to label. Some labels are maybe way more niche and have like a thing that they are focusing on specifically, like a certain genre or whatever. And so in that case, they have to be sort of more hands-on because they're just, a more specific thing that they're trying to do or present. In some cases, at some of the bigger indie labels, there might be more involvement on the creative direction side, but it just really depends. And I think it's like I said, it depends on the artist and how prepared they come in with their vision. Some artists come in very open to feedback and really want different people on the team to be involved. And then some artists come in knowing exactly what they want to do. And I think each label sort of handles that differently, but certainly at Father Daughter and other labels of our size, I think there seems to be a lot more creative freedom for sure.
Cool. Yeah, that makes sense. Just a couple more questions. One is, any advice to artists who are reaching out to you to have their music considered? Like, obviously, making authentic music is important. That's who you're going to pay the most attention to. But in terms of, like,
generally, I like
what
artists
they're
to
actually
like
saying.
Keep it kind of short and sweet. Give me the relevant links. Give me like a solid place where I can stream, like a private SoundCloud link or something. Do your research and check out what Father Daughter does. Check out what Alestial Sound does. Like, make sure that it seems like it's a good fit for you or something that you're actually interested in. But yeah, I think like being brief and being very friendly and personal, like, I don't need people to show off about their streaming stats or who they've toured with, or I'm definitely considering all those things. And like, I'll ask about them if I need to, but in general, I just want you to send me your music and tell me a little bit about yourself and keep it kind of brief. And then if I like it, like we'll keep talking and we can kind of unpack more of those details. But I usually try to tell artists, like, don't come at A&R people or managers or other people in the industry that you're trying to pitch, writers, publicists, whatever, with a long-winded bio and your whole package and whatever. It's actually much better to just be kind of brief and personal and take it step by step rather than trying to like present a whole thing in one email.
Totally. I like even just pitching this podcast for various things, I struggle with that. Yeah. I'm like, do I list the people who've been on or are going to be on? Do I not do it?
I mean, how much is too much? Yeah, you know what it's like. How much to is pitch. Not enough? Like you do it a couple times and you figure out what works based on what responses you get. And so I'd also encourage artists to like I said, like, yeah, you're gonna send out a couple of cold pitches that are probably really embarrassing. If I look through the archives of my email when I was first starting out, like I was sending out all sorts of stuff, trying to work with people and very wide eyed. And so you definitely get better the more that you do it and the more research you do on kind of who you're pitching. So do your research, I think, is really important as well.
Cool. Last question. What's something you're excited about today? Anything
music related. I just started watching this show on Netflix. It's a Netflix original called You. Have you heard about it or seen it?
I just saw something about it today for the first time. Someone was like, yeah, I just binged this whole entire show and I feel like dumber for it, but no regrets.
And like it's pretty polarizing, I think. But I just started watching it a couple days ago and I'm genuinely excited to watch it later tonight. It's a wild ride. I highly recommend it. I don't know. I love both like highbrow and lowbrow TV, and this show is actually like a really good mix of both. It's like sometimes feels very prestige and other times feels like very trashy, and I'm like here for it in a lot of ways as someone who like enjoys both of those things. So that's something that I'm genuinely excited about. I'm sorry, that's like such a boring answer, a fucking Netflix show, but